Yo, it's your boy JTG, aka the author of Damn What I Write This Book To, How to Play the Game. And you are listening to Solid Monster Sounds Off. Cheer.
Hey, this is Jeff Jarrett, and welcome to GlobalForceGold.com.
Wait a minute, I thought this was a wrestling promotion.
Right now, I'd like to congratulate you for taking about 20 minutes out of your day today to watch this special video.
Wait, what?
Why do I want you to watch the video? It's real simple. I want you to learn more about what me, my family, my friends, and my fans are all doing to be a part of this special opportunity called Team Jarrett.
Ooh, how exciting.
What do you have to do to watch the video? Real simple. Just fill out the information below, click submit, sit back, and watch the video.
Is this thing from Pornhub or something?
What's the next step after that? Even more simple. You wait on a call from a member of Team Jarrett for you guys to discuss next steps. And also, we got to get some information.
Oh, great.
Like your mailing address.
How about I give you my social security number, too?
And how you want me to personalize the 8x10 autograph.
I don't give a fuck about your autograph.
Guys, don't waste any more time. Sit back, enjoy, learn about gold, and watch the video now.
This guy wants me to sign up for some scam. I'm still waiting for the boom that he promised us.
Where's the kaboom? There was supposed to be an earth-shattering kaboom.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly! Woo!
Welcome to episode 435 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, April 10, 2016. I am the Solid Monster, and this is the first episode I am recording on my new Dell notebook. I settled on another Dell. My last one gave me 6 good years, and Apple just took too damn long to update their MacBook, so I stuck with Windows. I recorded a test show yesterday, and it sounded fine. So now the next step is investing in a new microphone. I'm going to put those PayPal donations to good use. Yeah, I spent a couple of $100 on one that I thought was going to be great, and I got it. I assembled it. I started recording with it. I'm like, all right, this is going to be great. This is going to be cool. And I thought it sounded like shit. So I had to box the whole thing back up. I sent it back. I think I'm going to have to spend a little more. I have one in mind, but I think I'm going to have to sell my firstborn to buy it, and I don't even have any kids, so we'll see how that goes. As you heard at the top of the show, Jeff Jarrett has resorted to using the Global Force name to push some pyramid scheme. There's even a giant banner for it on the GFW website. It says, join Team Jarrett and earn your weight in 24-karat gold. Holy shit. If you go to globalforcegold.info, it takes you to the video. And it's funny, because in the video that Jarrett recorded, he actually calls it a .com, so he can't even get that right. But you watch this video, and then you have to sign up and give your personal information just to watch another video. And this one's 7 minutes long, even though in the video, Jarrett says it's 20. It's actually 7. So let me save you some time. I got a link to the video anyway. I just put Dixie Carter's name in there instead. It's some guy talking about how you can turn your spending habits into savings habits, and you can get paid in cash and gold. Then it talks about all the experts, what they have to say, and it lists Robert Kiyosaki among the so-called experts. Why am I not surprised to see his name mentioned? The pitch is that if you give your information and you sign up to become an affiliate, basically, you get a free 8x10 personalized autograph from Jeff Jarrett himself. Ooh. That'll be worth $6.17 at the fucking flea market one day. So if you scroll down to the bottom of the page, you see it mentions a company called Carrot Bars International. It's a German company. You send them money, and in exchange, you get gold bullion in very small denominations. And you make money by... The real way you make money is you refer other people to send money and buy these things and so on and so forth. It looks so bad for Jarrett to lend the Global Force name to this. It's like the company endorses it. I mean, he is the company, so I guess it's pretty much one and the same. But it's just, it's so low rent. And Jarrett always talked about the boom. People still make fun of him. Where's the boom? Because many years ago, he talked about there's a boom coming. There's a wrestling boom coming, and, you know, we're going to be at the forefront of it. I'm still waiting for that boom. You know, NXT's doing well enough. I don't know if NXT, I would say that that's a boom. You know, Lucha Underground's not exactly booming. They've got some buzz around them. The UK wrestling scene is booming. You know, maybe that's what he was referring to. Maybe that's the boom that Jeff Jarrett was talking about. You know, all I know is this. This right here is the most that we've heard about Global Force in months. I got a question on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. You may remember somebody asked me, is there any update on Global Force Wrestling? They have a good roster. I haven't heard anything. What's going on? And I answered the question. I said, the only thing that's been announced recently, there was some kind of press release or announcement that was put out at the beginning of March. So it's been over a month now, about how there was some production company that was going to kind of reimagine the show, all of the existing footage, and they were going to take wrestling in a different direction, which is funny because, you know, there is a little something called Lucha Underground that's already doing that. But aside from that, there's been nothing. There's been nothing new announced about Global Force, no major announcement, no domestic TV deal. Supposedly they had some TV deal, I think, in New Zealand. I don't think a single episode of their show has even aired there yet. So I don't know what's going on. This is the most news we've heard about the Global Force name in a long time. And it has absolutely nothing to do with wrestling. They've now just become a laughingstock. You know, their slogan is Join the Force, right? That's their slogan, Join the Force. That's the Global Force Wrestling slogan. I think it's about time we change that to Join the Farce. As long as Jeff Jarrett insists on using the Global Force name for shit like this, it's Join the Farce. Because that's all they are. I want to thank everybody who streamed the WrestleMania wrap-up show live last week or got it on the down low. That was the show that we did from Frankie's in downtown Dallas. Had a ton of fun. All of us did. Myself, Noah, Mark, Brian Blade. I want to thank them again. Without them and Noah especially and the equipment and all of the kind of behind-the-scenes stuff that went on to make sure that we could pull this thing off, that would not have been possible. So to everybody who made it a success. We had a ton of people there, too. We had every bit of 70 or 80 people who showed up, which was even more than we were expecting. We got a nice group photo out of it. We absolutely are going to try to do more of these in the future. I didn't want to commit to anything until I saw what kind of turnout we had. And once I saw that, it pretty much just blew me away. So the plan is for us to try to do one SummerSlam weekend here in either in Brooklyn or maybe even in Manhattan. Somewhere in New York City, we're going to try to do another one, at least a meetup, if not another live podcast. So it's definitely going to be one or the other or both that we're shooting for. I have a couple of ideas. So as time goes on, I'll keep you guys updated on that. So, yeah, it was just a rousing success, and I just wanted to say thank you to all the people I met over that weekend. WrestleMania weekend's always fun, because I always get to meet a ton of different listeners. They either find me, or if we do a meetup or something, I can meet everybody all at once, and it's just, it's overwhelming to see how many people listen to this show. Like, when you actually see them in the flesh, like in person, they're real people. You know, when you realize that, it's like, wow, that's pretty cool. And pretty cool to share a flight home with Paul Heyman. That was interesting. I did not want to bother him since he was with his children. Noah, unfortunately, didn't feel the same way. He got a photo with him at the terminal that was classic Heyman with that look of disgust on his face. I know that look because I've given Noah that look before. So I'm very familiar with that look. But overall, it was a very fun trip. I thought as a WrestleMania, like I said last week, not the best, not the worst. Kind of somewhere in the middle. Not as good as the last two WrestleMania shows. I thought 30 and 31 were better. But it was still enjoyable to be there and be part of that massive crowd, which was legitimately the biggest crowd in company history, so that was very cool. I want to, really quickly before I forget, promote the interview that I did with JTG a few days ago. We had him back on the show. This is my second time interviewing him. It's always fun to talk to JTG. He's a great guest. He's got a new book out. His first ebook was a big success. Talked about all the different ways that he and his partner Shad, back in their Crime Time days, got heat behind the scenes in WWE and a lot of the petty political bullshit that goes on. And he didn't name drop a lot of people, but he told just enough of the story where you can kind of pick up on most stories about which top stars he was talking about when he did talk about them. In this book, he does name some names. He tells some more stories like that. But this book is more of almost like a how-to guide. If you are in WWE, if you hope to one day be in WWE, it's meant to help you in terms of these are the things that you should do. These are the unwritten rules, or even written rules, that you should be aware of to avoid getting heat the way that I did. So it's potentially very helpful to somebody who is trying to navigate the kind of, I don't want to say the political waters, but just the whole backstage environment in WWE. This is what you do to piss off people, and this is what you do to not piss off people. But he also, when we did the interview, he shared some great stories. He talked about Titus O'Neil, something very surprising that I was not aware of, which is that, to his knowledge, this is not the first time that Titus had been in hot water for something similar to what he got punished for, which puts a different perspective on things. So he talked about that. He talked about one of the gimmick ideas that he pitched to Vince McMahon directly that ended up getting stolen, and they used it for R-Truth. And he revealed what the closet is, and has nothing to do with Pat Patterson. I know that's an easy joke, but I had never heard about that before. So as a longtime wrestling fan, I was very fascinated to learn about the closet that exists over at Titan Tower. So if you want to hear about that and a whole bunch of other stuff, check it out. It's up on our YouTube channel. It is a Sound Off Extra exclusive to the YouTube channel. If you want to download it as an MP3, the link is in the video description, as it always is. So head on over there, give us a subscribe, check it out. Speaking of JTG, I want to give a quick plug to Audible here. Audible is still offering listeners of this podcast a free trial for 30 days of its service. You can also get one free audiobook when you sign up for Audible. Even if you cancel during your trial period, you get to keep that book no matter what. Use audibletrial.com/Solomonster. That's our personal link, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. JTG's first book is up on Audible, and he narrates it himself, which I heard is hilarious. So you can download his book and use that as your freebie using our URL. The new book is not yet up on Audible. You can go on his YouTube page, at JTG1284. You'll see a pay hip link in the Twitter bio. It's only $2.99. It was a quick read, an easy read. It was fun. It's absolutely worth it. But if you want to get that first book, use our link, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. You can sample the service for 30 days. You can get JTG's book. And like I said, if you're not happy with the service, if you don't think it's your kind of thing, you can cancel. And you get to keep the book with his narration. It's not a bad deal. Don't forget, you can also check out our store on Pro Wrestling Tees. ProWrestlingTees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off. You'll find all the official Sound Off shirts up there. And also, if you want to make a PayPal donation, you can do so at any time on thesolomonster.com. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname. I want to say thank you to everybody who contributed this week, including Chuck Lunatic Lentz, John Loose Cannon Lopez, Beast Mode, Brock Joseph, who just ran, I believe, his first half marathon, so congrats to him on that. Ladies Man Levi Daly, Deadpool James Herrera, The Marietta Mauler, Alexandru Mata, John Pipelayer Pog, still one of the best nicknames I ever gave out, Bobby the Wizard Waldrop, Eitan the Executioner Zimmet, No Mercy Nick Horacek, Michael the Marksman Murphy, Misfit Miguel Mendoza, Payback Tejas Bagwat, The Demon of the Prairies, Scott Silbernagel, not my name, that was his, Light 'em Up Lamont Ambler, Josh the Joker Rosenberg, Evil Evan Cleave, The Chicago Screamer, Ian Noel Camelotes, Sex and Violence, Sebastian Kahl, The Reckoning, Chenille Yagendraneth, Misra Mohabir. That was a mouthful. Hopefully I said that right. Cherry Bomb, Kel McCain, who recently passed away. That one comes from Dwayne. And I just want to say to Dwayne, I am very sorry for your loss. And finally, Ryan the Dagger McTaggart and his son Money Maxwell McTaggart would like to honor the memory of Rugged Ryland McTaggart, who was born prematurely a few weeks back and fought like hell to make it, but lost her battle. My thoughts are with you guys. I cannot imagine what you're going through, so I won't even try. But if you're as tough as she was, I know you'll be just fine. That's a very strong family that you've got right there. So thank you to everybody who made a donation to the show. I very much appreciate that. I just want to mention a couple of items up front here before we get into Raw from Monday night, which was the big post-WrestleMania show. Tetsuya Naito beat Okada to win the IWGP title at the New Japan Invasion Attack show last night. I have not seen it yet. I intend to at least see the main event at some point, hopefully this week. And also, Blackjack Mulligan died on Thursday. He was 73 years old. He had been in poor health for a while now. I know Bray Wyatt and Bo Dallas had missed a Raw a while back because they rushed to be by his bedside. There was a health scare. This was just maybe a couple of months ago, and they thought he might not make it, but he did. I mean, that's how bad off he was. I think he had a heart attack recently. Mike Rotunda was his son-in-law, so that's the connection to Bray and Bo. Both of them, of course, are IRS's kids, so that's the family connection. Barry Windham was his son. He was famous for his time as part of the Blackjacks tag team with Blackjack Lanza. Also held the U.S. title a bunch of times while he was working for Mid-Atlantic. His partners with Ric Flair. He was rivals with Ric Flair. So he had a pretty good career. I know there's a lot of people listening to this show that probably are not very familiar with him. They did try to reboot the whole Blackjacks gimmick. If you think back to the Attitude Era, late 90s on Raw, it was Bradshaw. And I think it might have been actually Bradshaw and Barry Windham. They tried to reboot the whole Blackjacks. They were called the New Blackjacks. That didn't last very long. But I wanted to mention that because he was a big name in the business. And we lost a whole bunch of them last year, of course. Dusty Rhodes and Roddy Piper. And obviously, I know there's a bunch of others I'm just forgetting off the top of my head. So it's always shitty to hear that. Monday Night Raw this past Monday night was live from Dallas, Texas. This was the post-WrestleMania 32 edition. The Raw Instapoll that I threw up on Twitter, almost 3,000 of you voted, 2,879 to be exact. 81% thumbs up, 19% thumbs down. I was there live at the arena. It was the American Airlines Center. I thought it was a good show. I didn't expect the result to be that lopsided, though. And I don't know why. I just didn't. I thought it would be maybe more like 70-30. But 81-19 is a pretty resounding thumbs up for the show. The show, you know, it definitely, and this is maybe just being there live, who knows how it came across on TV. It may have come across even worse. Because it's always more fun, I think, to be there live. But the show definitely dragged in some parts. And this was not as wild a crowd as we've seen before with these post-WrestleMania shows. I've been to a bunch of them. This was closer to the bottom of the list than the top, but we had no authority anywhere on the show, no Triple H or Stephanie. We had a fantastic main event, and a bunch of new faces made their debut, which this show desperately needs. So, no argument from me. It was absolutely a thumbs-up show. I just don't know that I expected it to be quite that lopsided. So, as a way to protect Roman Reigns, the new Golden Boy, Vince McMahon apparently had JBL, and I'm going by what about 20 of you tweeted me during the show. Vince McMahon apparently had JBL on commentary explain multiple times throughout the show to the audience, including at the very beginning, that it's the Raw after WrestleMania. And so don't mind all the fans who boo the people they usually cheer, and they cheer the people they usually boo. They're just here to have fun. As if Roman Reigns has been adored, you know, the last 4 weeks in the build-up to WrestleMania on TV. I'm not even talking house shows or any other kind of event. We're talking TV here. I mean, how stupid do they think we are? So if he actually did say that, believe me, it came right from the mouth of Vince McMahon, but that did not make JBL look very bright. So they made that very clear at the beginning. Don't mind us. We're just a bunch of dumb morons who are here having fun. And when they put that graphic up of Roman Reigns with the title and the like coming up next, he was coming out for a promo. And they put the picture of him up holding the championship with the tagline, Dawn of the Roman Empire. I just knew they were asking for it. I'm just sitting there going, they are asking for it with this crowd. They know exactly what they're doing. And Reigns came out. He was showered in boos. I mean, if there were pockets of people cheering him, I would love for you to tell me where they were. Because I was looking around and I didn't see any. He was hated. And he comes out and he cuts a promo. And his new phrase is, I'm not a good guy, I'm not a bad guy, I'm the guy. And I thought that was a pretty clever line until I saw him use it on SmackDown. He used it again on SmackDown. And I think if he uses it again on Raw this week, that'll be one time too many. I would not have him coming out saying this every single week. As it is on SmackDown, I kind of cringed a little bit. Like, it was great on Monday, you know, Thursday, it's like, yeah, okay. he doesn't need to come out and say it again on Raw this Monday. We get it. We get it. But he was definitely acting very heelish on this show. And you know the way he brushed off AJ Styles and he kind of brushed off Sami Zayn, especially when those guys came out to lay claim to wanting a championship match, Reigns literally was like, you know, like, get out of here. Like, you're a little peasant. You're a little jobber. You know, get out of here. I like that. I like that a lot. He comes off as so much more natural that way. And also, you know, people aren't stupid. When he comes out on TV, people hear the reaction from the crowd. They see the crowd. They know what's going on. You saw it at WrestleMania, right? WrestleMania is their big show. He went out there. He got booed. People aren't dumb. They see what's going on. So for him to not ignore it, but to embrace it and to kind of react to it, which John Cena never does. John Cena, how many times have we seen John Cena come out and cut the same promo? You guys paid your money. You can boo whoever you want. You can cheer whoever you want. I mean, how many freaking times have we heard him say that? Roman Reigns comes out, and he looks, you know, at times anyway, he looks kind of annoyed. And then he reacts to it. Like, even after he won the title at WrestleMania, I mean, from where I was sitting, I couldn't hear what he was saying, but I went back. And you can hear him kind of jaw-jacking with the crowd and, you know, I run this bitch and all that kind of stuff. And I like that. Smug, snarky Roman is the best Roman. And they did set up a fatal four-way for the main event with Chris Jericho, AJ Styles, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn to determine a new number one contender. Sami ended up being taken out later on backstage by Kevin Owens, which that looks to be a match at the next pay-per-view, which I am totally fine with. And he was replaced by a surprise return, which we'll get to that later on here. Vince McMahon opened the show and said that with Undertaker's win at WrestleMania, there is no more lockbox. There is nothing for anyone to hold over his head anymore, so I guess we'll never know what was in that box. It just seems like a cheap way out to me, but who knows? It might still come out down the line if Shane wants to be spiteful. Shane did come out here to thank the fans. He also wanted to shake his father's hand and, you know, show that you are indeed the better man. And he went to leave, and Vince stopped him. And he accused Shane of coming out and upstaging him and figuring that you're going to end up destroying the show anyway. You know what? I'm going to give you the chance to run Monday Night Raw after all for the night. Much to the fans' delight. People loved that. They did the yes chant. People went nuts for it. This made absolutely no sense whatsoever, because the whole point of the stipulation at WrestleMania was that if Shane McMahon could beat The Undertaker, then he would be able to run Raw, right? If and only if he beat The Undertaker. And here we have Vince McMahon voluntarily allowing Shane to run Raw, if only for one night, but still giving him the keys to the castle and letting him run the show anyway. But you know it's not just going to be for one night. You know that Shane is back. You know he's probably going to run Raw again this week. This is not the end of it. So, you know, look, I'm glad. I wanted to see Shane McMahon stick around. But this just illustrates how completely inconsequential stipulations really are here in WWE. And here's another one for you. This is not really a stipulation, but just as head-scratching. Chris Jericho, right? He beats AJ Styles at WrestleMania. And everybody around me just watched that and was like, huh? Like, what? Why? No real rhyme or reason for it. They had a really good match, and Jericho won, and good for him, but, you know, it didn't really make that much sense that Sunday night. It made even less sense 24 hours later, because fast forward to Raw, AJ Styles now becomes the number one contender for the WWE Championship. It's like, what? The only way that makes any sense at all is if AJ beats Roman Reigns at Payback, and try not to laugh when I say that, but if he beats Roman Reigns at Payback, and even funnier than that, Chris Jericho then becomes the number one contender for the title at the next pay-per-view. That's the only way that any of this really makes any sense. And it's not, that wouldn't be the first time they've done something like that. You know, you think back to Bret and Owen. Owen beat Bret at WrestleMania. That same night, Bret wins the title. So naturally, the next step is Owen gets a title shot, right? And he did at SummerSlam. They almost did something similar, or they could have, in 2001. Triple H beat Steve Austin, three stages of hell at No Way Out, right? A month before Austin won the belt at WrestleMania, you think to yourself, well, what sense does that make? Well, it would have made sense. I mean, The Rock was going away. you would think, okay, Triple H is going to go babyface, which he kind of teased on Raw the next night. He teased that he might go babyface. But he'll go babyface, and he'll kind of take The Rock spot, and, you know, Austin will have a challenger for the next few months, and they can wrestle for the championship. And I think what probably happened there, because Triple H is the smartest man in wrestling, and he probably realized that, look, I'm not beating Austin for the belt. Austin came back a few months ago. He did the big heel turn. He won the championship at WrestleMania. This guy's not dropping the belt. So if I feud with him, I'm just the next babyface that he can beat to get to the next guy. And I don't want to be that guy. So instead, you know, he probably figured, well, I'll be better off teaming with him instead. You know, that way I'm on his same level. He can't beat me. And the two of us can run roughshod here in the company, which is what he did. Very smart. But anyway, I digress. New Day was mega over with this crowd. They loved everything that they did. They beat the League of Nations after the League of Nations had beaten them at WrestleMania. So there's your even Steven booking. Not the last time we would see that on this show. And as I said a while back here on this podcast, and I think most people probably could have figured the same thing out when the news leaked, I think from Pro Wrestling Sheet, that Wade Barrett was likely gone when his contract was up in June. He's leaving WWE. He has not denied it. So if he's leaving, then at some point he just had to be kicked out of the League of Nations. And so that's what they did here on this show. The League of Nations said, you are the weak link. Right? Was that a TV show at some point? You are the weakest link. Goodbye. And they kicked him out of the group. Literally, bro kicked him right out of the group. I could still see them, you know, using a guy like Bobby Roode and putting him in there if they want him on the main roster. Putting him in there as the, kind of the Canadian representative for the Canadian contingent of the League of Nations. And I don't know if I'm not a League of Nations fan, but that would not be the worst spot for Bobby Roode to be in. At least it would get him on the main roster, because I don't have any expectations of him coming to the main roster and getting the AJ Styles push. I mean, you look at the push that AJ Styles has gotten so far, okay? AJ Styles was a TNA guy through and through. All those years, over a decade, he spent working for Dixie Carter. He leaves, he goes to Japan, becomes a big star over there. He's the IWGP champion. Who in their right mind would have expected that WWE would sign this guy, would bring him in, he would completely bypass NXT, which practically nobody does anymore, right? Aries didn't, Joe didn't, Nakamura didn't, Balor didn't, they all go to NXT. He completely bypasses NXT, he debuts in the Royal Rumble, and now he's going to wrestle Roman Reigns in the main event of the next pay-per-view, most likely, for the WWE Championship. You know, I'd say that's a pretty good start for the guy. That is completely counter to, I think, what most people would have expected. And I'm glad to see AJ doing so well, because the guy's one of the best in the world. He deserves to be in the spot. He deserves to be wrestling for the championship. Frankly, he deserves to be the champion. Now, they've invested all that time in Roman Reigns, and I get that, and I know why he's not going to win the belt. But if you really look at it just from a talent perspective, and the guy is over, the fans are into him, he goes out there, he has great matches, there's no reason for him not to be WWE champion. But I don't have any sort of expectations that a guy like Bobby Roode is going to come in and get the same kind of push that AJ Styles did. I mean, he's no AJ Styles anyway, and I love Bobby Roode, but let's be honest, he's not. Very few people are. So I look at that and I'm kind of torn. Like, I know they showed him at the TakeOver special, which would mean that he's coming to NXT, and that's fine. I have no problem with that. Maybe they'll do something with him and Aries at some point. They have that history together. But here's another guy who really should be on the main roster. And if you bring him to the main roster and he's not wrestling for the WWE title, then what is he doing, right? So as much as I don't like the League of Nations, at least it's a, you know, kind of a moderately decent spot, I guess, for him to be in if they wanted to go down that road. And then eventually the League of Nations is going to disintegrate anyway and he'll splinter off and do something different. So I don't know. Maybe that isn't the worst role for somebody like him. At least it's a way to get him on TV. The Wyatt family then appeared out of nowhere. They attacked the League of Nations. No idea why, but they were greeted as baby faces in doing so. I mean, anyone would be for attacking the League of Nations. Bray did an interview with Sam Roberts for his podcast last week, where he admitted what we already, all of us already know, which is that WWE doesn't know how to use the Wyatt family. I know, breaking news, right? I want to read you, paraphrasing, but I want to read you the exact quote here. He said, "I don't think when we set out and finally got the call up, I don't know if WWE really understood what they had. We knew the NXT crowd had responded so well to us. And when we came up here, we never in a million years thought it was going to explode the way that it did. We were so different that I don't think the company knew even how to use us, and they still don't know how to use what we are." And that's a shoot right there. That is a shoot. Anybody who watches this show week in and week out, which I know some of you don't anymore, but most of you do, anybody who does, you already know that. You already know the whole story with the Wyatt family. And I don't know where they're going with this whole thing, you know, the heels attacking the heels. Maybe they are turning them, I don't know. But I'm telling you, and I've said this before, and I'm going to keep saying it. Fan favorite Bray Wyatt. He doesn't even have to, like, become a babyface. Like, I don't even know what Bray Wyatt in that character could do to be, like, a classic babyface. What's he going to do, go around kissing babies and shaking hands and slapping hands on the way down to the ring? I don't want to see him doing that. So I don't even know if saying turn him babyface is really an accurate way of describing it. I think it's just letting the fans kind of dictate where they want to see this guy go. And I think they want to cheer him. And I think they want to see him up against, heels instead of babyfaces. And I think that the crowd will naturally kind of turn him. But I think fan favorite Bray is the way to go. And I'm looking months down the road. Right? Not just yet, but I'm looking like later in the year, and I'm telling you, babyface Bray and heel Roman is absolutely a money feud. And I know it's a feud that's been done before. We saw it last year, and it built to that Hell in a Cell match, which is a very good match. But when you do the turn, it's a completely different dynamic. It makes it fresh again. And I think that heelish Roman that we saw signs of earlier on this show, if they go all the way with that guy, and I still hope they do, but if they go all the way with him in that role and they let the fans kind of turn Bray and Bray can become kind of this cult anti-authority hero, there's money in that feud. I'm telling you, that's a big match down the road. Apollo Crews debuted. He pinned Tyler Breeze, bringing Breeze's record on the main roster this year to a cool 0-49. I don't know who looked that stat up. It was all over Twitter. Somebody looked up the win-loss record this year for Tyler Breeze. Yes, he has lost all 49 matches that he has had so far in 2016. He may actually get to an 0-2016 record by the time this year is over, the way things are going. People were impressed by all of Apollo's big moves, the standing moonsault. But he has the same problem that he had on the NXT roster. And it's something I've talked about before. You know, the always smiling babyface. It's just not... it's not a winning formula. And as this guy shows up on TV more often, like in week one, you watch him do these moves and it's like, holy crap, this guy is really athletic. That's really cool. Then there's week two. Then there's week three. Then there's week four. By the time you get to week eight, okay, those moves are not as impressive. There's got to be something about him. There's got to be something about that character that people want to see. You know, I don't know if that's enough for him to just go out there and smile and do fancy moves. I just feel like I've never really seen him cut like a great promo, so I don't think we can call him a great promo guy. Maybe he's got to work on that. But I just think that always smiling babyface, it's just death. Long term, it's just death, and he's going to have to change it up somehow. So fresh off his Andre Memorial Battle Royal win, Baron Corbin made his Raw debut. This was the night of NXT debuts here. He cut a very lame, overly scripted promo standing in front of the trophy. And then he had a match against Dolph Ziggler. And this is a great argument for why using jobbers, I think, can still be effective, even if you don't do it every week. I know, yeah, it's all about ratings, right? Can't put jobbers out there, but I still think, yes, you can. And this is why. This guy should have gone in front of an audience, a TV audience, that doesn't really know who he is. I mean, the live audience in the building pretty much knew who he was. But you got a lot of people watching on TV who don't watch NXT and who don't know who the hell Baron Corbin is. And he should have gone in there and beaten some scrub in 20 seconds with the End of Days, right? They could even get the crowd to count. That's what they were doing when he first debuted, when he was kind of a babyface, I guess. They would count because his matches ended so quickly that became the gimmick until people, you know, turned on the guy. So they could even try, you know, something like that. Lead the crowd, right? That's their new thing now. Let's lead the crowd with chants. Let's lead them to chant what we want them to chant. Well, fine. Get them to start chanting during Baron Corbin's matches. Put them out there every week against some new scrub. In 10 seconds, in 15 seconds, in 18 seconds, he could beat people with his move, get the move over, right? That's the way that, you know, Baron Corbin should you know, be used on Raw. And Dolph Ziggler, you know, Dolph Ziggler is pretty much a scrub. I like Dolph, but let's be honest. I mean, that's pretty much all he is now. But he is a former world champion. He does still have a lot of fans. I don't know why, but he does. He's not somebody that you would beat in 20 seconds. He is a guy you would go in there and have a competitive match with before he ultimately loses. So they had an 8-minute match. They had an 8-minute match that the fans lost interest in as it went along. And then it ended on a double countout. He couldn't even get a win in his very first match. This guy is 6'8". Okay? He's 6'8". He's got a sad face for a belly button, but he's 6'8". He's in there stalling with rest holds in his very first match. Who thought that was a good idea? What did you expect the crowd to do? So, not surprisingly, when you're bored, you look to find other ways to entertain yourself, and in this match, it was a beach ball. Three of them, I think, popped up during the course of this match. One would get taken away by security, people would boo, then a few minutes later, another one would magically appear. And the fans chanted, "Beach Ball City." They chanted, "Let's go beach ball sucks," which I laughed at. That was actually very funny. The beach ball was the biggest star on the show up to this point. And he did lay out Ziggler when the match was over with the End of Days on the floor. The match that he lost, by the way. I'm going to assume they'll have a rematch on the undercard at Payback, if it even matters. I mean, Dolph's a good guy, I mean, in theory, for him to work with, because Dolph, and this is probably to his detriment. The thing with Dolph Ziggler is he bumps around for everybody. I mean, he oversells, but he bumps like a madman. So, in a way, it's like, all right, putting him in there with Corbin is not the worst idea for Corbin. But, you know, let's wait 4 weeks before you get there. And then you can have a match on pay-per-view. Then you can build to it. His first big challenger is Dolph Ziggler, former Intercontinental Champion, former, I think, U.S. Champion, former World Heavyweight Champion, still beloved by most of the fans who have been given absolutely no reason to cheer for this guy, but for some reason they still do. You build to that. You don't put him in there in his very first fucking match. So that's the problem I had with this. Zack Ryder came out for a promo. Lillian Garcia fucked up. She started talking about this is an intercontinental title match. She stopped herself midway through saying it and sat back down. Lillian had a rough night. She fucked up at least three different times by my count. She ended up arguing with one of the stagehands at ringside. I'm sure she got an earful from the people backstage. It was a rough night for her. Miz interrupted Ryder. Asked for a title match, and surprise, surprise, Zack Ryder agreed. So Lillian was right. She must be clairvoyant. We had ourselves an intercontinental title match, and in a result that Stevie Wonder could see coming. And I predicted as much when we did the live sound-off that morning at Frankie's. Right? Go back and listen. I said, he's probably dropping the belt tonight. And people are like, boo. And I'm like, you haven't been watching this show very often, have you? And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. Zack Ryder, merely a transitional champion to get the belt off one heel in Kevin Owens and get it onto another one in The Miz. And I feel bad for Zack. You know, it would have been nice for him to get a little bit of a run. I mean, I remember his U.S. title run. I remember how happy everybody was for him when he won the U.S. title. That was 5 years ago, almost 5 years ago now, right? It was like late 2011, I think. They had that image of CM Punk as the WWE champion, Daniel Bryan as the world champion, Zack Ryder as the U.S. champion. It's like, who's going to lose their belt first? Well, we found out pretty quickly, I think, the answer to that question. They gave him, you know, hardly a month before he dropped it. Here they gave him a day. But I can't hate on this because Maryse is back. And if you go back and listen to those early sound-offs from like 2008, 2009, 2010, I was a big Maryse fan. I thought she was awesome. And I was very sad when she retired. But now she's back. She is in her husband's corner. She's his new manager. And she's apparently going to be on the next season of Total Divas. That might be the biggest reason why she's back. Total Divas not doing very well. Ratings keep plummeting. So they've reshuffled the deck. They've knocked a few people off the show. They've added a few people back to the show. Maurice will be on the show. Lana's going to be on the show now. I'm still not going to watch. But I'm sure with Maurice on there, it'll probably be very entertaining. I'm sure she'll make a fine addition. So Miz got shoved down by Zack Ryder's dad in the front row. Maurice just came out of the crowd from out of nowhere. And she got all up in, you know, Mr. Ryder's face and slapped him, doing her best Stephanie McMahon impression. And this distracted Zack in the ring. He got caught by the skull-crushing finale and was pinned. So The Miz is your new Intercontinental Champ. How many IC titles is this for Miz? I feel like he's up to like 5 or 6 by now. So he's the new champion, and I gotta say, I love this combo. I think Miz and Maurice are gonna be great. I think this is the perfect role for Miz to be in. And yes, you heard that right. I'm actually looking forward now to seeing The Miz on TV. So there you go. We had Lita come out with the rest of the women for the formal presentation of the new Women's Championship, which I love. I think it looks great. I'm a big fan of the white straps, so, and I don't mean that in a sexual way. I mean that in terms of titles. So Lita's out there, and you know, they had Lita come out and unveil the championship the night before. She was in the ring at WrestleMania holding the belt when they were doing the introductions for the Triple Threat match. And I think that's great. Lita is one of the most popular faces from that era. She was a good wrestler. But I wonder where Trish is. You know, I can't help but wonder where Trish Stratus should be out there with her. Like, her and Lita are supposed to be like best friends. Why not have both of them out there? Because when I think about that title, and I think about somebody who really helped, you know, make it mean something and really improve when she first came in to where she ended up, I think of Trish Stratus. I don't think of Lita. I think Lita was good. I think Trish was very good. And I think Trish would almost be a better representative to have out there, you know, to present that championship, or at the very least have her and Lita. So I'm just wondering why she was kind of left out of the mix that whole weekend. So Charlotte is laying it on real thick. She's out there trying to, you know, pretend like, oh, you know, all of us here work so hard, and she's acting all humble. And the big thing was, she was of course not very humble at all. The crowd was chanting, "We want Bayley." They started singing the Bayley song, which I'm not going to sing. So Charlotte had a little bit of trouble kind of getting there, but she eventually got there, and Natty confronted her, and then they had a little bit of a brawl. So it looks like Charlotte and Natalya is going to be the next championship match at Payback, which is great, you know, because the two of them, you know, the two matches I've seen them in, which is their takeover match from a couple of years ago, and the match they had at Roadblock, were very good. The takeover match was excellent. That was one of the best women's matches in the entire company in the last 5 years. Probably a hell of a lot more than 5 years. So these two work very well together, and Natalya has been neglected for so long, it's nice to see her getting a championship match. The Matadors are back, and they're not Matadors anymore. They're just themselves. They're Primo and Epico. They were in a vignette talking about how great Puerto Rico is, except for their justice system. Right? If you're ever knifed in the shower, you probably don't think Puerto Rico's all that great. The Dudleys and the Usos, yet another WrestleMania rematch. They had a tables match. The Dudleys won, so there's your other 50-50 booking for the evening. It was a little peculiar how they were sticking around at ringside. They stuck around for a while, and long enough that they were still out there when Enzo Amore and Colin Cassidy finally made their Raw debut, and they did so to a thunderous ovation. This is a debut that it was long overdue. These men were beloved. Enzo was on fire here. He made fun of Devon's lazy eye. I would pay to see a match between Shawn Michaels' lazy eye and Devon's lazy eye. He said they were so ugly that when they cry, their tears roll to the back of their heads to avoid their face. And the Dudleys tease getting in the ring to go after them, but they bailed. This was an effective way to debut somebody. These guys are going to fit in just fine on the main roster. And, you know, all this new talent on one show, I tweeted during Raw, I tweeted that I thought what would make this even better, and they could still do this, is if they framed it as Shane McMahon raiding Triple H's talent from NXT, and that kicks off a war between him and Shane McMahon. And I get the impression, like in real life, I just get the feeling like Triple H wants nothing to do with any sort of storyline with Shane McMahon. They're kind of keeping him apart. You know, again, that's just the vibe I get. And I get it. I can understand why Triple H would feel that way. But I think that's a money feud right there. I still say Triple H and Shane is money It plays off of real life. You know, those are the best stories. They announced that Dr. Phil is going to be the guest host for Raw this Monday in Los Angeles. I thought we were done with this guest host bullshit, but apparently not. So he'll be there. So once we saw Sami Zayn get taken out backstage earlier in the show because he got powerbombed through a table by Kevin Owens, once we saw that, I tweeted, does WWE have the balls to put Cesaro in his spot and have him win the four-way? Well, I was half right. They did indeed have the balls to put him in there, but he didn't win. And I'm okay with that because these four guys had an awesome match. This was better than anything at WrestleMania. I thought the women's match was the best match on the card at Mania. This went the exact same length of time, 16 minutes, and this was even better than that. Jericho got chance of Fat Bon Jovi, which is one of the greatest things I've ever heard. Crowd loved everything that Cesaro did. They went nuts for him. AJ Styles and Cesaro had a little exchange at one point, which may have been their first time ever locking up in the ring. And it made me look very much forward to that eventual program down the road. In the end, AJ Styles pinned Chris Jericho after a Styles Clash. I guess this counts as 50-50 booking again for the third time here on the show. He pinned Chris Jericho after a Styles Clash to become the number one contender to the WWE Championship. And he will meet Roman Reigns at Payback on May 1st. And for the people who didn't see it, which was pretty much anybody who wasn't there, AJ Styles stuck around for like an extra 15, 20 minutes. Just him alone. He was in the ring. The crowd would not stop cheering for him. He got a standing ovation. He left the ring. He did a lap. He went around the ring slapping hands with all the fans. I mean, he may have milked it for a little too long, but he was out there for a long time, soaking in all the cheers and everything. So for anybody who thinks that AJ Styles is not over, and I know, again, this was the Raw after WrestleMania, but I think AJ Styles has been, you know, getting some pretty good reactions, you know, week to week. And, I mean, I think he's in a pretty good position right now. I don't think it took very long for the fans to take to this guy, and apparently his merch is flying off the shelves. You know, they keep stocking up on those AJ Styles gloves, and they keep selling out. So, good. I'm happy for him. I really am. I mean, I did not expect him to come in and be doing this well this fast. He should be. He deserves it. He's that good. I just didn't expect it. So I've been pleasantly surprised, and now look at this. He's only here a few months, and he's going to wrestle Roman Reigns, and the reaction has been mixed. And the reaction has been mixed, at least from what I saw, like from you guys and in the Facebook group. People are upset. Oh, they're just going to feed him to Roman Reigns. AJ's going to lose. And yes, AJ is going to lose. I don't doubt that for a second. But I also don't think that Roman Reigns is going to pin him clean. And maybe I'm going to look like a fool a month from now. Maybe I'm wrong. But the way I see this, there's like three or four different scenarios that could play out here. Okay. Now, the idea that I pitched, and it was in response to, I think, something that somebody said on Twitter. So I just kind of thought about it. I came up with it and I tweeted it. Because there's a few different ways you can go. This is not like the only good idea. But I'm thinking, all right, you know what? If they want to keep things consistent from, like, the New Japan days, and I know WWE, they probably don't give a shit, but it would be a cool thing for the fans if they don't even have to acknowledge it. They could just try to be consistent. If they wanted to be consistent, the last time we saw Bullet Club and AJ Styles, right, he got booted out. Anderson, Gallows, all of them, they beat the hell out of AJ Styles and left him laying. So, if they wanted to, what they could do is have Anderson and Gallows, who were there on Monday, they were ready to debut, for whatever reason they didn't. Clearly, they're going to be on TV very soon. They could have him come out and attack AJ Styles at Payback. Help Roman Reigns get the win. They could align with Roman Reigns, because everyone's thinking Balor Club, or maybe a Bullet Club reunion, and they'll go back with AJ. I kind of like the idea of these guys debuting and hooking up with Roman, which I think a lot of people wouldn't see coming, and forming a heel stable called the Roman Empire. You know, I mean, now the original Roman Empire I pitched was in November, and it involved the Usos, which I guess they could still do. I mean, the Usos are pretty stale at this point. But I like this idea better now. You know, they've waited so long, I'm over that. And I like the idea of these guys being hooked up with Reigns, not like as his lapdogs. People, you know, hook him up with Roman Reigns. Great, you know, he'll be their lackeys. Roman Reigns is the WWE champion. Roman Reigns is the guy, right? He goes out there on TV and he says it, but it is. That's a shoot. He is the guy. I can think of worse positions for a guy like Doc Gallows, who was a mid-card guy in WWE last time we saw him, or Carl Anderson, who's never even set foot in a WWE ring. I can think of worse places for them to be on that card than hooked up with the champ. So you can call them lackeys, you can call them whatever the fuck you want. That's a pretty good position for them to be in if on day one, they hook up with Roman Reigns and form their own three-man faction. I know they've trademarked that bulletproof name for something. Somebody pointed out Roman Reigns is already wearing a vest. Very astute observation, that is true. And you can't tell me that, you know, WWE making Roman Reigns, of all people, the leader of a new version of the Bullet Club, wouldn't be a great way to get this guy even more heat than he already has. Like, if they come to their senses and say, you know what, let's turn this guy. Let's get some real heat on Roman Reigns and turn him. That's a great fucking way to do it, you know? I mean, the guy already has a lot of heat, but this would get him even more heat. So that would be my idea. Gallows and Anderson cost Styles the title. He comes close, but he falls short. They interfere. People think maybe that they're going to help AJ, but instead they help Roman, so it's a little bit of a swerve. And you've got the Roman Empire with Roman and those two guys. Now, the other idea that you could go with, if you do think that we are eventually going to see the Balor Club, and Finn Balor is long overdue for a main roster call-up. I mean, he does still have the title, but I said this last week when I was pitching different ways you can get him on the main roster. It doesn't matter. He could be the NXT champion and debut. Kevin Owens did the same thing last year. And then he dropped the belt about a month later. There's nothing, or 2 months later. There's nothing wrong with that. You could go with the Balor Club if you want to. And you could have the Balor Club debut at Payback, and they take out AJ Styles just before he's going to win. And that, so Roman gets his win. He retains the championship. And now coming out of the pay-per-view, instead of doing a rematch and beating AJ for a second time, AJ kind of transitions to a brand new feud against Finn Balor and the Balor Club. And that's a hell of a program to have on the main roster. You could do that. Now, the other two options, you could have AJ Styles beat Roman Reigns clean, and then Roman snaps and attacks him, and that's the heel turn. Or you could just have Roman win clean, which is very possible, but I'd like to think that they're not going to do that. I would like to think they've got some kind of a plan, some kind of a like a surprise or a shocking turn of events or something. Something different. Something other than Roman wins LOL. It's got to be more than that. I know they want to build him up. Like, I know that. I know that. And in their mind, I could see them thinking that way. We finally pulled the trigger. Roman's our guy. He's going to be our guy for the next 2 years. If you don't like it, too bad. AJ's a great worker. AJ will make him look like $1 million, and then boom, he'll hit him with a spear and Roman wins. That could happen. I think that would be a big mistake. I really think that would be just an awful mistake. So, of all of the ideas I just mentioned, I kind of like mine the best, but I am partial. But I think part of the problem is we all talk about these different ideas that are so exciting to think about, and then in the end, they kind of go with the status quo. I mean, that was the story at WrestleMania, right? All the different scenarios for how the main event could go or how Undertaker and Shane could go. What did they do? Undertaker beat Shane. Roman beat Triple H. It's just very paint-by-number shit. I mean, that's kind of the WWE formula, and I think they've got to try something different. They've got to give us something different than the status quo. And I think they should do that. I think they should go down that route at Payback. So, speaking of Payback, the way the card is shaping up right now, you got Roman and AJ in the main event. You've got Charlotte and Natty. It looks like, based on what they did on SmackDown, there may be a match between Emma and Becky Lynch. Happy to see Emma back full-time now on the main roster. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn seems like a likely match. And then, of course, you have the Dudleys, Enzo and Kaz. So, you know, the Payback card is shaping up to be pretty good. It's nice to see a card that's not just full of WrestleMania rematches.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
NXT this week was a lot of TakeOver recaps and post-match interviews from TakeOver. Funaki was there to translate for Nakamura after his match with Sami Zayn, and Nakamura understands English perfectly well. He cut Funaki off in mid-translation to tell us that Strong Style has arrived, which is true. It's funny he says that. You know, he got four staples in the back of his head from a moonsault at an NXT house show a few days ago. He'll be okay, though. He's already back wrestling. The one match they aired was the dark match that we saw at the TakeOver show in Dallas with Apollo Crews and the goddamn Drifter. That was the main event of this show. Of all the matches they could show here, they just had to show this one. And it wasn't very good. It was okay. It was boring. Crews won with his spinning powerbomb finish. Next week, they hyped appearances by Nakamura. He'll be in action. And Austin Aries will make his in-ring NXT debut, his non-takeover debut on an NXT show. And this is the start of, I think, 3 or 4 weeks worth of shows that they taped from Fan Access. So the setting will be a little bit different the next few weeks. That should be cool to see. Lucha Underground. This was a really strong episode this week. I liked it a lot. Ivelisse and Cobra Moon were the ones to open the show in action. And I thought they had a great match. This was the best that Cobra Moon has looked since she debuted. You could see certain spots where they had these like jump cuts. I mean, we've seen at least a couple of Cobra Moon matches so far, and the one common thread in most of them, if not all of them, has been that it's so blatantly obvious they had to edit a lot of bad stuff out of them. It wasn't as obvious here. I feel like these two went out there and they had a great match. It was nice to see Ivelisse wrestling another woman for a change. She won with a running Code Red to hand Cobra Moon, I believe, her first loss here in Lucha Underground. It's a real bummer that Ivelisse got hurt again. I don't know how many people heard about that. And I don't know how far ahead in the tapings they were when the injury occurred. They may have already been taping for Season 3. So we may still have many more months of Ivelisse matches here before it happened. But she suffered two fractures and a torn ligament, I think in the same ankle that she had hurt previously. And it sucks because I think she's killing it right now. So hopefully she doesn't have to miss too much time. We finally got a profile piece on Killshot. Killshot's been one of my favorites since Season 1. We don't get to see him too much. He says he served in the military, and he got the name Killshot because he had 37 confirmed kills. All bad guys, or so he was told. Remind me never to fuck with Killshot. He said he was captured by the enemy and held captive for 13 months before escaping. And then they showed him killing a bunch of Middle Eastern, you know, terrorist-looking dudes. Elsewhere, Famous B, he interrupted Masquerita Sagrada in the middle of a little workout to give him his business card, and he tells him, you gotta call 423-GET-FAME, which again is a number you can actually call. You'll get a voicemail recording if you want to try it, and you can leave Famous B a message. You can tell him why you think he could be of help to you. So he gave him his business card, he told him to call the number, and he left. And that transitioned over to another segment where we saw the Mac bumped into a Sexy Star. She was in the middle of an intense workout when he interrupted her. These Lucha Underground people are always working out. If they're not in the bathroom, they're working out. They're in shape, these fuckers. Except the Mac. See, the Mac actually is in shape, but you would never know it by looking at him. Speaking of which, that brings me to something I wanted to mention here. So Dario Cueto forced the Mac on this show to team up with Marty the Moth and Mariposa in this Trios Tag Team Tournament. They wrestled Joey Ryan and the crew. So remember, Joey Ryan and Cortez Castro are actually undercover cops. And their boss, they had a vignette at the beginning of the show where their boss, their captain, told them, you gotta work together and win the Trios Tag Team titles for some reason. I don't know why it's so important for them to win the titles, but apparently it is. So anyway, this Marty the Moth guy, this is what I wanted to talk about. He needs new gear. Everybody made fun of poor Bo Dallas for so long, his flabby midsection, you know, when he would jog around and all that. And he changed to a singlet, which I think is more flattering to him now. This guy looks like he's wearing trunks that are about a size too small. It's not very flattering at all. And it's hard not to notice, you know, when he's in there with his shirt off wrestling. It's hard not to notice that, you know. I think what he should do is he should dress up in an actual moth costume. You know, wings and all. Anything would be better than what he wears now. So Mr. Cisco, he was on fire in this match. Cisco's kind of just been a background player this whole time, and this was kind of a breakout match for him in a lot of ways. He was busting out all sorts of flashy moves and flips and getting himself a Mr. Cisco chant, which I never thought I would hear on the show. And things broke down near the end, and between Mac and Marty, and the Moth got caught with the shatter machine by Castro and Cisco, and Joey Ryan snuck in, got the pin for his team, so they advance. The cops advance. The cops always advance. Mariposa attacked the Mac after the match, and Sexy Star came out to make the save, and she chopped the ever-loving shit out of Mariposa. You had to hear these knife-edge chops, my God. So then we go outside, on top of the temple, on the roof. Rey Mysterio is speaking with Dragon Azteca Jr. Now, in an earlier segment, I forgot to mention, we saw Dragon Azteca spray painting a giant question mark on the Lucha Underground sign outside. And now here we see Rey appears. So apparently he's Batman now, if Batman was bilingual and had the knees of an 80-year-old. So Rey tells him that next week they're going to be partners in the Trios tournament. He got them in. And when Dragon Azteca asked him, well, who's our partner going to be? Prince Puma appears. And he speaks for the very first time on this show. He says actual words come out of his mouth. He says that he is going to be their partner. I almost passed out. I couldn't believe it. The man can actually speak. I will say, it was a very cool shot of the three of them up there, kind of standing side by side. It's like something out of a comic book, which I guess is the whole point. I mean, Lucha Underground is basically a giant comic book come to life. Main event was Phoenix getting a rematch for the Lucha Underground Championship against the Monster Matanza. Matt Stryker tells us that Matanza means slaughter. I like that. Hulk Hogan wrestled Sergeant Matanza at WrestleMania 7. I like the way that sounds. He also referred to Matanza as the Eater of Worlds. Where have I heard that before? This was just pure destruction right here. I don't know any other way to describe it. You know, Phoenix was able to pull off a couple of flashy moves, but didn't really amount to much. Matanza gave this fucker a release German suplex into the second turnbuckle. I got concussed just watching it. Oh my God, that was brutal. Matanza gave him a power slam on the floor at one point. That got a holy shit chant. He gave him his twisting power slam in the ring for the pin. So I guess that's his finish. And then he just started clubbing him, just raining blows down upon this poor guy. And the referee is trying to stop him also. And Dario Cueto's his manager. So Dario's at ringside. They show him. He's yelling at the referee, "Don't you stop him. You'll be out of a job. You'll be fired. You let him do his thing." And Katrina suddenly appears at the top of the staircase, tells Matanza to stop. Meanwhile, Mil Muertes sneaks up behind Matanza. See, he's like one of those guys that Zeb Coulter used to tell us about, like sneaking across the border. I remember when he used to talk about that every week. Mil Muertes sneaks into the ring behind Matanza. He attacks him. He knocks Matanza out to the floor. So they're teasing Mil Muertes against Matanza, which is a match that I didn't know I wanted to see so badly until right now. Stryker wonders whether or not Mil Muertes was saving Phoenix or if he was just making a statement about getting his belt back. I think I'll go with the latter over the former. Although I wouldn't mind a triple threat match. I mean, as cool of a match I think one-on-one as that would be, just two big bulls beating the hell out of each other. I like the idea of a triple threat match because I think having a high flyer, having a smaller guy in there would probably make things even more fun. And you know me, I mean, I'm a big fan of the whole Mil Muertes Phoenix feud. Anytime they're in the ring together, I mean, it's excellent. So I think putting all three of them in the ring could be a hell of a lot of fun. And who knows, maybe we'll get it. I guess we'll find out. But this was a fun show, a very fun show this week. Let's move on to the mailbag and take your questions. We have a whole bunch of them here. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in to thesolomonster@gmail.com. Katie from Staten Island. We have a female question here. Just a comment and a question about where I think the women's division is heading in the next few months. I thought the triple threat match was the best match on the card at WrestleMania, which it was. I agree. The interesting thing about that match is that I believe Sasha Banks has yet to be pinned or submitted since her debut, which is brilliant because what I think will eventually happen, which is a SummerSlam match with Sasha against Charlotte, and the story is simple, with Sasha being undefeated and also looking for redemption from last year in Brooklyn with her losing the NXT Women's Championship. What do you think? I think it's a great idea. They're doing TakeOver SummerSlam and Raw again, back-to-back-to-back, in Brooklyn this summer, in the same building where Bayley beat Sasha for the title. I think the redemption story, you know, she comes back 1 year later and wins the big one. I think it's perfect, and I hope they do it. The only question is, after they do Charlotte and Natty, which is clearly what they're going to do at Payback, you know, even if they get two pay-per-view, let's say they get two pay-per-view matches out of them, you know, they need at least one more woman, if not two, for Charlotte to feud with before she gets to Sasha at SummerSlam. You know, the stuff with Becky, I feel like Becky, it's been done already. They're not going to go back to Becky Lynch. Probably not going to go to Emma, because I don't see them matching heel against heel. They're not doing much with Paige. I mean, I guess she would be the obvious choice. And then they could transition to the Sasha match for SummerSlam after that. And then maybe on Raw the next night, because I was thinking about this, you can debut Bayley. Because I know a lot of people were hoping and expecting, you know, she lost the women's title. They're going to debut Bayley the night after Mania. And she got a lot of cheers during that segment on Monday night, but there was no Bayley. I think you can hold off on that and debut Bayley the night after SummerSlam in that same building and have her confront Sasha Banks, the brand new women's champion. I mean, how great would that be? It doesn't mean I would go right to Sasha and Bayley as a match. I would just do the face-to-face confrontation on Bayley's first night just for a visual, almost like a preview of what's to come, and get that big reaction and the big stare down. You know, Charlotte would get her rematch. Bayley would have to prove herself. She would have to work her way up through the ranks, just like she did on NXT to get the match with Sasha in Brooklyn. She had to beat Becky. She had to beat Charlotte. She had to beat everybody. And I think if they could drag it out long enough, what I do is I build to the first main roster singles match between Sasha Banks and Bayley at WrestleMania next year in Orlando. I just think the way that I just laid it out there, I think this stuff writes itself. Jorge sent this in. This is a little bit of a different question, kind of borders on political, but let's tackle this here. He says, I'm from Chile, and I saw the recent photo of Triple H and Stephanie McMahon posing with Henry Kissinger. Now, Henry Kissinger, for those who don't know, he is the former Secretary of State. He served under Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford, right? I believe. It was under two presidents. Anyway, Jorge wants to know, how is this allowed in a company so obsessed with public opinion? Do they know that Kissinger is a war criminal? Do they know that he was the mastermind that sparked one of the bloodiest military dictatorships in Latin America? The coup in Chile was followed by 17 years of an oppressive regime with millions dead, thousands of exiles, and a broken political system that still stands to this day. Do you think they fucked up posting this picture endorsing a war criminal like Kissinger? So what happened is Triple H posted a photo on his Twitter page a couple of weeks ago from some event. I don't know where they were, but it was a photo of him and Stephanie kind of kneeling down with or talking to or listening to Henry Kissinger. And no doubt, you know, Kissinger caused a lot of bad things to happen in Jorge's country. He caused bad things to happen in a few other countries as well. I just think it's the whole celebrity thing. I don't know what they really think of Henry Kissinger. Maybe they like him, maybe they don't. Maybe they don't know. Maybe they don't care. You know, I don't know what their thoughts are on him, but he's still a famous figure in history. I mean, look, if you look at that tweet that Triple H posted, almost every comment underneath is war criminal, war criminal, can't believe you would post this, war criminal, war criminal. You know, if I were them, I wouldn't be posting photos with any political figures at all, because it's you know, to steal a phrase, and I hate this because it's corny, but it's true, it's bad for business. It's just bad for business. You're just alienating a certain segment of your audience. Just don't even get involved with that stuff. Nothing good can come from it. You know, I get messages from people asking me for my thoughts, like on the presidential election, because I follow all that stuff. I mean, I'm a political junkie, and I never talk about it. And I'm not going to talk about it, You know, politics and religion, people absolutely lose their freaking minds. It's no different than dating, right? If you're on a first date with a girl, the two things you never bring up are politics and religion. You just don't do it. And if they ask you, like, oh, you know, are you a Democrat? Are you a Republican? Like, what do you believe in? You just tell them you don't believe in anything. tell them you believe in Harvey Dent. Okay, that's about it. Trust me, you'll be much better off for it. Wesley from Miami, what's next for Brock Lesnar? Very simple question. And somebody posed the same question in a thread yesterday in our Facebook group, and I said I would answer it here on the show. You know, they said CM Punk couldn't beat him. Seth Rollins couldn't beat him, you know, in a one-on-one match. Roman Reigns couldn't beat Brock in a one-on-one match. Dean Ambrose couldn't beat him in a one-on-one match. So who's next? And it's probably Bray Wyatt. Even Bray, in that interview I mentioned with Sam Roberts earlier, even there, he said he and Brock are going to meet. It's just a matter of when, not if. I still, and I've advocated for this match before. I advocated doing it at the Royal Rumble a couple of years ago when Brock was the champion and Brock winning, but Cesaro looking strong in defeat, you know, a hell of a lot stronger than Dean Ambrose did coming out of WrestleMania. He wasn't even on Raw last Monday. Now it's a couple of years later. Cesaro just came back. It's only one night, but seemingly he's got some momentum. Most people will have momentum when they've been gone for a few months. So he's back and the fans are into him. And you know what? I think that he should be the one to beat Brock Lesnar. That's what I think. Brock's been winning match after match after match. I look at the current roster and I ask myself, self, who else could they pick to beat Brock? The obvious answer is Roman Reigns. If they're not turning Roman Reigns and Roman is their boy, you know what? They've been building Brock Lesnar up for a couple of years now. It's pretty obvious that what they probably will end up doing is having Roman Reigns go over him, figuring, well, we built up Brock this whole time, and eventually Roman will be the one. He'll have the honors to finally slay the beast. It'll get him even more over. And of course, it won't. But that's what they think will happen. But I could see that being the mentality. And I think you're wasting a win. Roman Reigns is already the WWE champion. If you don't want to turn him, don't turn him. If you want to turn him, great. You'll open up a whole myriad of different opponents for him. But at this point, I don't see Roman Reigns beating Brock Lesnar. It's not like that's some sort of passing of the torch. It's not like all of the problems that they do have with these TV crowds booing Reigns and everything is suddenly going to wash away if he beats the beast. If anything, I think it might only make things worse. So I actually look at this and I go, the guy's already the champion. He's already the guy. It's a waste. You're wasting a win. So I look at this roster, and again, it's like, who else is there? Who else could they pick to beat Brock? There's no need to waste it on John Cena. There's no need to waste it on Randy Orton. Like I said, there's no reason to waste it on Roman Reigns. Seth Rollins isn't beating him. Dean Ambrose couldn't beat him. AJ Styles is not beating Brock Lesnar. Then who? And I come back to Cesaro. Why not? Power-wise, he matches up with Lesnar. That's one of the biggest reasons why I'd love to see a match between these two guys, is that I just think, you know, there's very few people on that roster, I think, power-wise, raw power, who can match up to Brock in the ring, you know, spot for spot, can probably get Brock up for certain moves. You know, there's very few people like that on the roster, and Cesaro is one of those few. I think power-wise, he's a good matchup for Lesnar. Height-wise, he's taller than Brock. So I don't want to hear this nonsense about, oh, I can't buy it. And people used to say that about Daniel Bryan, and that's a match I'm, you know, just so bummed that we're never going to get to see. But that was always the argument with guys like Punk and Bryan. Oh, they're too small. I can't buy into that. Well, you don't have that problem here. Brock, I think, is like 6'4", 6'5". Actually, I don't even think he's that tall. I think Cesaro might be 6'5". Brock's like 6'3". So it's not like a huge difference, but size isn't the problem. And he's a guy right there, okay? He's not quite main event, but the potential is there. He's right there. He just needs something extra to get him over the hump to that next level. And a win over the unbeatable Brock Lesnar, I think, could get him there. It's all about credibility. They've got something with Brock. I give them a lot of credit. I thought Dean Ambrose was winning at WrestleMania. the way that he was beaten down and beaten down and beaten down every week, I figured this has got to be leading to an Ambrose win, especially with that stipulation, right? You got a barbed wire baseball bat. At least if Brock loses, if he gets hit in the head with a barbed wire bat and bleeds all over the place, you know, all right, he got hit in the head with a barbed wire bat. I think people can understand that. But they didn't even do that. Brock beat him up for 10 or 12 minutes and he pinned him. So he beats guy after guy after guy, and they've got something special in Brock where when he does eventually lose, it should mean something. Don't squander that. It's all about credibility. I mean, what better way, more than any title, to give the guy credibility than having him beat Brock Lesnar? You know, they can do the Wyatt match at SummerSlam if they want to. If that's the next thing for Brock, fine. You could do Lesnar and Bray Wyatt. You could do the match at SummerSlam. Maybe you line up Randy Orton. Maybe you line up AJ Styles after that. And they all get beaten. And you save the match with Cesaro for WrestleMania next year. Because if Brock's going to lose, it probably should be at WrestleMania. I think to do it at SummerSlam, it'd be cool to do Cesaro and Brock in Brooklyn. And maybe they do, and Brock wins. You know, you could probably do the match and not have Cesaro win, but I just think it would mean that much more if it was somebody like him who did finally get that win. And I think it would be better off than to save that for WrestleMania next year, because it'll mean more. Chris from Finland, I was perusing, he says, Reddit, and found a crazy stat that might lend some credence to your theory of Triple H main eventing WrestleMania 56, or whatever number it was that you said on the last podcast. Triple H is shitting, or it's more like shitting the bed, on the WrestleMania main events, is part of a 7-year cycle. 18 with Jericho, 25 with Orton, and 32 with Roman Reigns. This means you can rest easy knowing that his WrestleMania 39 main event won't come for another 7 years, giving you ample breathing and warning room. Well, thank you, Chris. I did not know that. That is reassuring. We know WrestleMania 39 is probably going to be a rematch with Roman Reigns. I figure Mania 46, because he says 46 in, I think he said 46 and 52 or 53 would be the next ones. I think 46 will be some kind of Legends match with John Cena. And WrestleMania 53, by then, maybe it'll be against one of Shane's sons. That's my early prediction. Alex from Kansas City. I watched SmackDown this past week, and I saw the debut of the Vaudevillains against the Lucha Dragons, and they looked all right, but not spectacular. Do you think they have a chance in WWE? No, I don't. I don't. They'll be in the spot the Ascension is in within a few months. Give it a few months, they're going to be right in that Ascension spot. You'll be seeing them exclusively on Superstars and Main Event. If they even get on SmackDown, it'll be a miracle. I just don't see that gimmick having any shelf life on the main roster. I never did. I was never a big Vaudevillains fan, even when they were on NXT. You know, I got a kick out of... I was a big Aiden English fan when he first debuted. It was just him. He wasn't doing a tag team. He would come out. He would sing on his way to the ring. They would throw roses at him. I was a big fan of that. It was very entertaining. And then he transitioned to the Vaudevillains, and I just was never a big fan of the act. You know, I think them winning the NXT tag team titles with Blue Pants in their corner and getting that big pop in Brooklyn last summer, I think that was their peak. I think they've already peaked. And it's too bad because Simon Gotch is actually really good. I think they did a match a few weeks ago. It was the Vaudevillains against Gable and Jordan. And they had Gable in there doing his chain wrestling with Simon Gotch, and he was hanging with him, like, tit for tat. I tell you what, I don't know what the future holds for the Vaudevillains in terms of tag team or singles, but if that's a sign of what Simon Gotch can do, at some point down the road, I wouldn't mind seeing a Simon Gotch-Chad Gable match. Because what little bit I saw on NXT a while back was actually pretty good. But I think just as a tag team, they've already hit their peak. You know, I just think that gimmick is death. Ian from North Carolina. I recently came across a video online that showed first-time watchers of pro wrestling reacting to various historic moments. Included in these moments were the Mankind Hell in a Cell fall, Triple H grinding on Katie Vick in the casket, and Mae Young being powerbombed through a table. Needless to say, the first-time watchers reacted most of these with disgust and horror, asking, how on earth can anybody watch this freak show? My question to you is, if you could share 3 moments from wrestling history with someone who had never watched pro wrestling before to illustrate to them why people keep watching this so-called freak show, what would they be? I thought about this. I had to think about this. This was not easy. And we're talking moments here, not matches, but moments. And I think showing most matches is going to be ineffective anyway. I would brief them, if we can give them a briefing. You know, let's debrief these people on the whole Macho Man Elizabeth story first, and then show them the reunion at WrestleMania 7. Like, give them some context first, and then show them that for Mania 7. I mean, I still watch that back, and I still think that's one of the greatest things they've ever done. And they had the benefit of building the whole Macho Man Elizabeth thing for years before that. These days, they would do something, you know, they debut a new pair and they break them up 2 months later and do the reunion 2 months after that, and then they would wonder why it didn't get over. So I would absolutely use that as one. I would show them either the beer truck incident with Austin or the Zamboni incident with Austin. And I know the beer truck is more famous, but I think the Zamboni one was just so much better. It was so much more chaotic. Just the scene of this crazed, you know, redneck guy driving a Zamboni to the ring and diving off to attack his boss. I mean, that would make me an instant fan if I had never watched wrestling before. I'd watch that and be like, man, I got to start watching this stuff. And the third thing, I would probably go with the Big Show and Floyd Mayweather. Not the match. I would go with the angle that kicked off their feud. When they did that angle at No Way Out, that was one of the greatest celebrity angles that they've ever done. That was so well done. And Floyd Mayweather is one of the most popular athletes in the entire world. You know, he may be a dick, but, you know, Mayweather is a name that everybody is going to know. Big Show, 7 feet tall. The sight of Mayweather, I think, going face to chest with him, hopping the guardrail and kind of going up to him in the ring and then breaking Big Show's nose and Big Show chasing after him through the crowd and spitting up blood all over the place. That's one of those things I think a non-fan watches and goes, like, I know it's fake, but, like, that had to be real, right? Like, that's the kind of reaction I think that would garner. So that's a good one. I would go with that. So those would be my 3 moments. Avinay from Bombay, India, has an international observation to offer as it relates to Roman Reigns. I've been watching wrestling from the late 80s when we first got cable TV in our country. I pretty much stopped watching once JBL became the champion. Poor JBL. And completely missed John Cena's run. I tune into WWE every now and then and love to listen to your podcast. I've noticed that most of the audience here that watches today's wrestling is like fish. They just lap up everything WWE gives them. When John Cena or Roman Reigns come down here, they are cheered as heroes, the heroes that WWE wants them to be. This got me thinking that maybe outside of the US and maybe the UK, Reigns is a big attraction, and that's why WWE is sticking with their plan of pushing him as the face of the company. Maybe they don't care as much about what the North American fans alone think, with them now being this kind of big global company and all. What are your thoughts? I'm sure John Cena and Roman Reigns are huge overseas. And I think there's a lot of truth to what you're saying. I wouldn't say that they don't care about the North American audience, because I still think that's their bread and butter right there. But as they expand, the international audience becomes even more important. And they make a lot of money overseas in a lot of different countries. But I don't buy for a second that they don't care what the US or the UK fans think, because that is still their biggest fan base. I mean, there's a gazillion people over there in India. And not all of them are wrestling fans. But when you talk about India, you talk about China, which they've had trouble breaking into. I mean, you're talking about a good billion plus right there alone. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of potential customers. The US and the UK and Canada, I'd put them in there too. You know, North America, that's still their market. And I don't think their mentality is, well, we don't give a shit. Like, we have them anyway, so who cares? Let's focus on Germany. And let's focus on Italy, and let's focus on Australia. I don't think they think that way, but I do think that the audiences overseas by and large, probably would react very differently to Roman Reigns if he came walking out than an audience here in this country would. And I don't know what the specific reason, or if there is just one reason for that. Maybe it's absence makes the heart grow fonder. They just don't go overseas very often, so when they actually go there, people go nuts. I think they go nuts for anybody. It's like that rock star mentality. Like, we never get to see these guys. They come to our country once a year or once in a blue moon, so we're just going to cheer everybody. I think that may have as much to do with it as anything. That coupled with the fact that I'm sure on TV, you know, John Cena and Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar and those guys are built up to be these larger-than-life characters and heroes in some cases. And I would expect them to get a very good reaction when they go overseas. But I wanted to mention that here on the show because I do think it's important, you know, to be fair here and to just show that depending on where you are in the world, your thoughts or your reactions to Roman Reigns and some of these people are going to be very different than what you're used to. And just because you don't like the guy doesn't mean that there aren't 15 people who fucking love him. And I do think that that's important to remember. But I do still think he should go heel. Durrell from Ohio. What do you think of forming a new version of the Hollywood Blondes with Tyler Breeze and Dolph Ziggler? Honestly, I think something like that would work better with Miz and Ziggler. Since both of them have been in WWE movies, Tyler Breeze has not and probably never will. So if you wanted to play up the Hollywood part of the whole thing, I think, you know, Miz and Ziggler would probably make more sense. And they're also two guys, I think, that can talk about how maybe they've been, abused, they haven't gotten their just due, and they're going to take matters into their own hands, and maybe that sort of thing. And Miz has Maryse with him now. You know, she's another blonde. And I know this doesn't help Tyler Breeze, but I think it would work better if you do it with those two guys. And I'm not big on using old names, so maybe instead of calling them the Hollywood Blondes, you call them the A-listers or something. I'm not a huge fan of recycling names, so I'd come up with something different. Nicholas, I thought you might find this quote from Vince Russo on Stone Cold's podcast interesting. It's in reference to WWE ratings. Russo said, they lost 800,000 viewers from hour one to hour three. Here's what pisses me off. Triple H will go out there and say it's a different time. People can watch the show on their iPad, on their phone, on their computer. Okay, Triple H, let's say you're right. You're telling me that after hour one, 800,000 people decided to get up and watch the end of the show on their phones. It's freaking ludicrous, bro. I added that last part in there. Anyway, Nicholas says, I think this is interesting because while I understand the appeal of watching a show while discussing it on social media, I do find it difficult to think that people would then turn away from a large TV screen just to watch something on their phone. So, I'm curious, what do you think of Russo's comment? I'm with him. I actually think that WWE makes a lot of excuses for an audience that is eroding because they just don't like what they're watching, and I think it's also just too much. I mean, you're always going to have that loyal core wrestling base. I really don't think they're ever going to chase them away. I think there may be periods of time where the numbers kind of go alarmingly low, and then they're just going to rebound. I think no matter what, you're always going to have that base of whatever it is, 2 million, 2.5 million, and I just don't see it going below that. You know, unless they send Hulk Hogan out there to go on a racial tirade in the middle of the ring with a live mic, I don't see them losing that core base audience that they have. And so the question is, well, how do you bring back a lot of those lapsed fans? How do you bring in new fans? And at the end of the day, 3 hours is a long fucking time. And if Raw was 3 hours in 1999, I don't think, it's not even that I think, I know the audience would not have been as big as it was. It would have been big. But I think even for a show that you really like, to do it every single week for 3 hours, It's not a sport. It's not a baseball game. It's not a football game. People will sit 3 hours or 4 hours through a baseball. I mean, look, I'm a baseball fan, and even, you know, 3 or 4 hours is a long time. I don't watch a lot of baseball games from start to finish. I can't do it. I just can't. But people will do that, but that's different. Name me another TV show that's every single week, 3 hours long, that has, you know, a gigantic audience. They don't exist. You know, these shows are an hour. Maybe they're 2 hours. I don't know. But most, there's a reason that most, you know, of those kinds of shows that they're competing with on TV are usually like an hour in length. So I just think as long as the show is so damn long and they pad it with all this filler, the show does not have to be 3 hours long. So they're padding it with all this nonsense and all this talking, and they go on and on and on. You're never going to build your audience, you know, up beyond a certain point. It's just not going to happen. So then you're left with the wrestling fans, and clearly they're not enamored with what WWE's been feeding them now for the last few months, as the Raw numbers have reflected. I mean, even Raw last week, this was the biggest Raw of the year. And traditionally, their audience will shoot up a ton, and they'll have like 4.5 million people. They had about 4 million people watching Raw last Monday. That's not a great number. I mean, it's great, I guess, compared to what they've been doing, but even that's not a great number. You know, people just aren't buying what they're selling. So I'm with Russo when they use that argument of, well, you know, we're in a different time, and that's true. And Noah Mark, you know, he got... We were talking about this in Dallas last week. He's like, I challenge you to watch an entire episode of Raw on Twitter. And I'm like, dude, I already did. You know, when we went to Orlando for the Royal Rumble, we were out. I don't even remember where we were. But we were out one night while Raw was on. I think we wanted to watch Raw at, like, this is some sort of sports bar, sports restaurant at Universal Studios. And they have TVs all over the place showing all different types of things. And this is an NBC Universal property, right? That's the WWE family. And we went to the owner or somebody, and we said, are you showing Monday Night Raw? And they said, no. And we said, well, would you? And they're like, no. So we just went about our night. We're like, whatever. You know, we're not that into Raw where we have to rush back to our hotel and watch it. We hung out, and we had a fucking blast that night. And I kept up with Raw by following the WWE Twitter account, because not only do they tweet out like what's going on, they'll tweet out GIFs, they'll tweet out like almost like Vine type videos where you can watch the important stuff that you missed. Like, I don't doubt that has an impact on viewing habits of some people, but you can't tell me that when you do see that kind of decline from hour one to hour three, whether it's 800,000, 500,000, it's not like all of those people are going on Twitter, or they're going here, or they're going there, or they're all like, oh, I'll watch the end on Hulu or something. Most of those people are just tuning out. So I'm with Russo on that. I think it's a bunch of bullshit, and they're trying to rationalize why their audience is dwindling, and they're not paying attention to the actual reasons why. So a rare time that I find myself here in agreement with something that Vince Russo said. We have some audio questions. We haven't done these in a while, and some people have been sending them in, and I just haven't been able to get to them, so we're going to go with a couple of them here. This audio question comes to us from Dustin in Omaha.
Hey, Solid Monster, this is Dustin Dales from Omaha. I've been listening to your podcast since your interview with the ECW Zombie. Hey, my question this week is, what year do you think the Raw after WrestleMania became what it is today? When did it become the Raw that everyone is anticipating weeks ahead of time? And was there a time that Raw was more hyped than Mania itself, kind of like this year?
I think it goes back to 2012. I think that's when it became this big thing. It was that night after WrestleMania in Miami, and that was really the night that Daniel Bryan became a star. I mean, that's where people were going nuts for him, and he came out when the show went off the air. But he came out, and the whole arena was doing the yes chant. I mean, I had never seen anything like it before. So I think it goes back to 2012. Brett from Olympia, Washington. Which had the better ending between WrestleMania 10, WrestleMania 20, and WrestleMania 30? I'm going to go WrestleMania 30. And not just because I was there, but I just think it was the better, happier, you know, WrestleMania ending. I think WrestleMania 10, it was nice what they did, all the wrestlers coming in and kind of lifting Bret Hart up on their shoulders. I thought the Bret-Yokozuna match was, you know, was pretty crap, to be honest with you. And Yokozuna falling off the ropes, and that's how Bret wins. So, yeah, the match outcome has something to do with it, and I just didn't think that was really all that strong. WrestleMania 20, you know, what can I say? I mean, it was obviously, it was obviously a happy ending at that time. You had Chris Benoit tapping out Triple H, Madison Square Garden, place goes nuts. Eddie comes out, the two of them embrace, the confetti falls. Benoit's family comes into the ring. Look, to look back on it now, it's very depressing. You can never watch the end of that WrestleMania back again and feel the same way. It's impossible. You can't watch that and not think about what happened to both those guys. Not just Benoit and his family, but both of them. And that was a great ending. But I think WrestleMania 30 was the culmination of this story that had built up over so many months. And I know in WWE that it was like Chris Benoit's 18-year odyssey. But you know what? That wasn't a story that WWE told, right? I mean, if you knew Chris Benoit and you followed his career from WCW or even from ECW to WCW to WWE, it was a great story. Here, this was a WWE story where the fans got behind this guy for whatever reason, and it was not going to be the match they were going to go with, but they did it anyway. They made the right choice, and it made for this great story where this guy had to go out there earlier in the show, he had to wrestle a match, he had to beat Triple H, and he did. He got into the main event. I thought the main event was awesome. So was the WrestleMania 20 triple threat. Probably one of the best they've ever done. It's not my favorite, but it's pretty high up there on the list. And so was the one from 30. You know, even if 30 maybe wasn't as good of a match as that one, I still thought it was an excellent match. I thought the tap out, same move, right? It was very similar in a lot of ways to that WrestleMania 20 finish, in that you had the smaller guy that nobody ever expected to be champion using a crossface to tap out, you know, the other guy, the bigger guy, wins the championship, gets the confetti celebration. Here you had a stadium full of, you know, 75,000 people instead of an arena full of 20. So that was kind of a big difference there. But I just think that whole Daniel Bryan story, from where it started to culminating at WrestleMania in the big stadium setting, I got to go with that one. I just think it was more satisfying. We have another audio question. This one's buy or sell, and we'll end the question portion with this. This is from Abdulaziz from Saudi Arabia.
Hey, Sala Monster. Buy or sell on which one is better? The three stages of hell from No Way Out 2001 between Triple H and Steve Austin, or the Armageddon 2002 between HBK and Triple H? Thanks.
I'm going with the three stages of hell from No Way Out, Triple H, and Steve Austin. I actually watched the Armageddon match not too long ago. I don't even remember why, unless I was watching that pay-per-view. But I saw the Triple H Shawn Michaels one from Armageddon. You know, of all the matches they had, this is not near the top of the list. I mean, they basically gimmicked the whole thing up. They went from, I think it was the street fight, to a cage match, to a ladder match. And the fans, especially those later matches, they just were not into it. And Shawn took a crazy bump. We got to remember, he was only back in the ring for a few months at that point. He had the return match at SummerSlam. He was in the Elimination Chamber, so this was his third pay-per-view match. I think he had a couple of matches on Raw. I think one with Goldberg and maybe one with RVD. He had not been back that long after being off for 4.5 years. So this guy climbs to the top of a ladder at the end of that match, and there had been all these tables had been stacked up and set up outside the ring, and Triple H shoves him off the ladder, and Shawn takes this insane bump, and he kind of lands on the tables and under the tables, and so that was crazy. I just didn't think that match was really all that great. The three stages of hell from No Way Out, that was a great match. That was a really great match. And it's funny, I just mentioned this as part of a mailbag question before. When I was talking about logically what it could have and probably should have led to, which is Steve Austin went on to win the championship at WrestleMania the month after, or about a month and a half later, whatever it was. Why then would Triple H beat him unless Triple H was being positioned to be the first in line for a shot at the championship after WrestleMania? And they didn't do that. Instead, they paired him off with Steve Austin. But I still think it was a great match. I mean, those were two guys who were at the top of their game there. I mean, this was Austin after the neck surgery, but he was still, you know, he was still one of the best in Triple H. This was pre-quad tear, and I will always maintain that 2000 into early 2001 Triple H was the best Triple H. I know he got a lot more years, and you know he's still very good, but nothing can top Triple H, I think, from that 2000 to early 2001 time period. And some of his best matches came during that period. You know, he could bump like a madman. You know, when he wanted to, he was just a really, really good wrestler during that period, and can do things I feel like he either hasn't been able to do or has avoided doing. I don't know. It just ever since then, especially the second quad tear, and he's older, so part of it is age. Not the same guy. So this was Triple H arguably at his peak, at his physical peak. And I just thought that was a much better match than the one that Shawn and Triple H had at Armageddon. I think Shawn and Triple H, they had a better match at SummerSlam. They had even their last man standing match they did one year at the Royal Rumble. And they had a world title match on Raw, I think, at the end of 03. That was a much better match than the one they had at Armageddon. So I'm buying on the Three Stages of Hell from 01, and I'm selling on the one from 02. And this week's sad tweet comes to us from @ColinCowherd. For those of you who don't know, Colin Cowherd has a radio and TV show with Fox Sports. He hosts a sports show. He used to be with ESPN, but he got shit-canned last summer after he made some really dumb comments about Dominican baseball players, which was not the first time he said something stupid, nor would it be the last. This is the same guy who has admitted he does not watch wrestling. He hasn't even seen a wrestling match since some high school wrestling match he saw many years ago. The same guy who belittled Eddie Guerrero after he died. He said that Eddie's death didn't warrant a mention in the newspaper, in the sports section, because he wasn't an athlete, and it didn't deserve mention in the entertainment section because I've never heard of him before. That's a great reason, right? I've never heard of him before, so therefore he doesn't belong in the entertainment section. He made similar stupid comments after the Warrior died. He went on Twitter last Sunday. And this is what Colin Cowherd had to say, completely unsolicited. He just felt like tweeting it. He said, "The iHeartRadio Music Awards are fantastic. Here's what's not. Hanging out with 90,000 sweaty booger eaters at WrestleMania." So yes, Colin Cowherd does not like wrestling. He does not like wrestling fans. But here's why none of this should really, you know, get you too worked up. Yeah, there were a lot of people very worked up about this. And I kind of tweeted at, like, you know, you stay classy. And there were a lot of people who jumped on him for that tweet. But here's a good reason not to get too worked up about this. And for all the fun that we like to have at TNA's expense, not even they have accomplished this. For the first time, last November, Colin Cowherd managed to pull an impressive 0.0 Nielsen rating for his TV show. That's very impressive. That's not an easy thing to do. So whatever the sample size was that they took on this particular day, which was in the thousands, a whopping 67 people were tuned into his show. Not only that, Deadspin did a report a couple months ago that said his show only averages between 50 and 60,000 viewers on any given day on a network that's available in 84 million homes. But here's the kicker to all this. This podcast that you're listening to right now, right, which is for so-called sweaty, booger-filled wrestling fans, on some weeks, is beating Colin Cowherd's TV show. Now, you know, to be fair, I think his show is Monday through Friday. I think. I could be wrong. And this podcast, obviously, is only once a week. So that is fair to mention. But still, you know, if Fox Sports ever gives this guy the boot, I think it would be very poetic if they replaced him with a wrestling show. And judging by his ratings, we may not be too far off from that. So that's sad tweet. If you have any suggestions for sad tweets during the course of the week, you can tweet them at me. @Solomonster is my handle. You can also vote in our Raw poll, which I put up after Raw goes off the air each and every Monday night. Don't forget to leave us some love in iTunes and Stitcher. I know a lot of you guys are subscribed that way. You listen to the podcast that way. If you have not already done so, it takes 2 minutes. You can log in. You can give this show a star rating. We are a 5-star rated podcast on iTunes. You can write a review. Leave us some love if you would be so kind as to do that on iTunes or Stitcher. Check out our fan page on Facebook. Give us a like. And you can subscribe to our YouTube channel. We do have the full interview with JTG about his new book and some other interesting things I bet many of you guys were not previously aware of. Got some very interesting stories that he tells there on the podcast. So you can check that out in full on the YouTube channel. And don't forget, you can also download the MP3. There is a link in the video description. So please give us a subscribe while you are there. We will be back next weekend with a brand new podcast. That'll be episode 436. So until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a good week, and we will see you back here next week for more Sound Off. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster Sounds Off.
Watch these promos on NXT. Watch Raw. Watch a Randy Orton promo or a Sheamus promo. They never, ever look at the camera. It's because that's what they teach them now. You are not allowed to look into the camera. I think it's just completely idiotic. Why are their eyes not on me? That's how interviews always work. They're talking to me. They're speaking to us. They're supposed to be speaking to the fans. Maybe that's part of the reason why these people can't make a connection with the audience. Because they don't fucking look at us.
Solomonster Sounds Off. Since 2007, the Solomonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster Sound Off.